I swear sometimes you guys, the younger guys that work on my show, are just here to hurt me. Like, you're just here to throw me off. Like, oh, we're having a good conversation. We're just, like, getting ready for the show, good warm-up. And then you guys say stuff like, what do you mean you used to rent video games? And you guys are in your late 20s. And it just stings. It just hurts. It just hurts when you say things like that to me and you completely throw me off. Because now I got to sit in this chair and I'm trying to deliver. I got all these things lined up. Ugh. Painful. You don't remember renting video games. Like, that's just a thing that is beyond you. Anyways, by the way, for me last night, masterclass in channel changing. I could teach one of those, I swear. You could, so you know the "my name is Jose Mourinho" meme? That's me. I am Jose Mourinho of channel changing during this time of the year, getting a little piece of every single game. I'm basically an elite swordsman. Swordsman? Is that what it is? Yeah, right? Like, I'm just in, out. Like, you ever watch a great fencer? And that, it's got to be like me with the remote, basically. That is my tool. I am a craftsman when it comes to this time of year. I actually should live stream just so people can see me work. Because you would lose your minds. It would break your little pea brains watching me crush remotes and jump around from last night. I got a piece of everything last night. Everything last night. Every single game last night, except for the Rangers game. Except for the New York Rangers, Washington Capitals game, which I just, every time I would see the highlights of it pop up during the Sportsnet broadcast, they'd be like, and the Rangers. I was like, yeah, I know what's going to happen. I get it. You root for some series to just be sweeps, right? There's somewhere I'm watching Colorado and Winnipeg last night, and I go, God, I hope this goes 7 games. I just would love if we got 7 games in this series. And then there are others where you just go, Rangers, Capitals. Yeah, wrap it up. Let's go. 4 games. Get it off the slate. Let's finish this. Same with in the NBA right now, one of my top picks, Cavs, Orlando. I'm just, nope. Just wrap it up. Let's just get this one out in 4. Spider, see you in round 4. It's all good. Get there. Let's go. I didn't expect to be feeling that way with Suns Timberwolves. I went, oh, well, this is going to be a really good series. And the T-Wolves were completely owned this season by the Suns. And man, Suns went up in that game last night and they were looking great. And the T-Wolves just peddled them in the second half. Went, no. And now all of a sudden, if you're the Phoenix Suns, you're looking around going, wait, sorry, we just gave Grayson Allen, who got hurt in that game, like a ton of money, and we're committed to this team fully. And Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker can't get us out of round 1. But the bigger story there is that Minnesota all of a sudden actually looks like a really good team quickly. And all this stuff about, like, Jokic is clearly the best player in the NBA, but all the stuff about, hey, Ant being potentially the face of the NBA, that feels very real all of a sudden if you're paying attention at all to that series. Carver Hagee scores in overtime. Beautiful, because this is the only part of the game that I caught. I was like, oh, I missed this. Find out it's going overtime. Watch it. Boom, he pots one. Carver Hagee is tied for 3rd in NHL history with 5 overtime goals. That is outrageous. That is outrageous. How is that possible? I saw that stat and I stared at it for like 35 minutes. I went like, there's no way that this is actually real. And it is. But the Panthers, hey, thank God the Leafs didn't draw them in round 1. All I got to say is that, because that team is forceful. We had the Bucks regress to the mean without Giannis. Siakam dominated, basically sent Raptors Twitter into a tizzy. Raptors Twitter had full-blown meltdown. Like, you guys forgot Siakam's good? You guys forgot that he was capable of having a good game? I get it. It's 35.0 turnovers. It's a very nice stat line, but everyone went like, all of a sudden, what? We didn't get enough for Siakam. No, duh. We did this for weeks. And you're just figuring this out now? You're figuring out now that maybe Masai didn't do the best in the Siakam trade, considering he got Bruce Brown and a handful of magic beans? Yeah, wasn't the best. Canucks fall apart without Demko. Avs come back twice with a huge second period. And Georgiev, listen, Georgiev, the guy that sucked in game 1, all of a sudden emerges and outplays Hellebuyck in game two. There's just no other way to put it. Like, that's what ends up happening, that one. And then I didn't really watch a lot of the Canucks game, I will say that. I did see Zadorov lay some big hits. I did see Zadorov make, like, score a goal, look good. I'd be pretty worried, no Thatcher Demko. And then the night capper for me was watching Luka Doncic close out the LA Clippers. It's hilarious watching Luka. I want to talk about this a little bit more later, but because he's so clearly out of shape. Like, there's just no denying it. This isn't Jokic, where his body is just a little, you know, he's not a little chubby, but he's clearly in crazy condition because Jokic plays in Denver and is running up the floor all game and he's getting like 20 plus rebounds and he's just going nuts. Doncic is out of shape. Like, he doesn't go after loose balls. He gives up on a million plays a game. But then if you can just get it down to the final couple minutes, it's like James Harden's on the floor, Kawhi's on the floor, Paul George is on the floor, Kyrie's on the floor. It's like, yeah, clearly this is the guy who's going to make and take the big shots. And he has an FU attitude that is just really funny. Like, he got a hilarious tech in that game. And anyway, I want to talk more about that later. And then lastly, pitiful performance from Vlad Jr. yesterday. Like, really, truly cost the Blue Jays a baseball game. Not only did he go 0 for 5 with two strikeouts and grounding into a double play, his signature play, but he has an egregious error at first base. Right as his team is about to get out of a jam, they got two outs. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa throws a baseball over to him that is made by genuinely every first baseman that is older than, I think, 6 years old, 7 years old, 8 years old. Like, I don't know how low you got to go, but it's somewhere in that age range. Like, they're catching that baseball. A 13-year-old unquestionably is catching that baseball. Vladdy just drops it. And afterwards, he's like, oh, ho-hum. And you go, yeah, okay, all right. And he puts on the sad Vladdy face in the dugout, and you're like, oh, poor Vladdy. So unlucky. Just such an unlucky guy. And here's all I have to say about Vladdy is the Jays are now 13-11. They've been getting these wins. They've been finding ways to scratch and claw their way to victories and get these series wins, and they haven't been able to sweep, and they've had these tough moments where you go, they dropped that one, right? They dropped the one against the Yankees. They dropped the one against the Padres. This one's another just dropped effort. Their pitching is spectacular, and they just can't drive in runs still. It's still an issue. They can't crack five runs. And it's back to the same thing where they're down one. Vladdy makes that error. They're down a run, and you don't feel a lot of confidence that they're going to be able to come back. But a lot of it has to do with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and it's kind of frustrating. It's got to be frustrating for Atkins and Shapiro because they look at this thing and they're like, man, we got such good pitching. We've really assembled a good roster. Our defense is spectacular. The Varsho trade is starting to normalize. And we just can't get any production from George Springer and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. But Springer is just never going to own it the same way because he's a free agent signing. He wasn't like the prince that was promised for this organization. I just think of what we're at with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is people are sick of the excuses. People are sick of the promise. People are sick of projecting what he could be. It's time to see what he actually can be. Speaking of that, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Pretty big opportunity tonight at home. Luke Fox, senior reporter for Sportsnet. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
Good. Where's your confidence level at after game two?
Okay, it's actually shockingly high considering where it was at after game one, but I genuinely think it has to do with really two factors. One is Austin Matthews, and two is that I'm just not really impressed by the Boston Bruins.
They're not that amazing.
No.
On paper, Toronto should beat them. I was talking to someone about this, that the only two things that would worry me if I'm a Leafs fan I do believe the Bruins have the better coach, and I believe the Bruins have better structure.
Yep.
And I believe the Bruins have far better goaltending. I think the Leafs have the third and fourth best goaltenders in the series. So that's what would concern me. But I was looking into the 5-on-5 play, and the Leafs have a significant edge. It's just the sloppy discipline, particularly in game one, but there was a little bit of that in game two. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs penalty kill is scary. So if your penalty kill is not going to magically fix itself, and I don't believe it will, then they need to be much more disciplined.
I'm totally with you. Listen, I'm not trying to say, I'm not trying to stand up here and tell everyone that I predict the Leafs to win this series. I don't like predictions at all. Could Boston win? Absolutely. Could Toronto win? 100%. But it's just when I'm watching it, like, Boston doesn't have much that strikes fear in my heart. Let's put it that way. Outside of just goaltending performances. And so I guess let's start with that, which is Swayman has shut the Leafs down. They think they're going one for one. It seems to be easy to predict that he's going to be in net for them tonight. The question is, do you think they're going to alter this plan at all now? Like, has game one, even though Allmark played great, do you get the sense at all that that has put any seed of doubt in the Bruins' brains about the way that they're going to operate this moving forward?
As in, is Allmark a lock to start game four no matter what happens?
Yeah.
I don't know for sure because they're not telling. If Swayman has another fantastic performance, I don't see how you don't deviate from your plan. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Allmark was the reason they lost game two, but I just think Swayman has had the Leafs number. I mean, he beat them three times in the regular season. He was the first star in my mind of game one. And it's really fascinating that they should have some confidence coming into Toronto because they're starting a goalie that hasn't lost yet in the series. Like, it's a very unique situation to be tied 1-1 and you get to start a guy that hasn't had a loss and has a win and is feeling great and he's refreshed too. Mm-hmm.
Dude, this is the other thing too, is from the Leafs standpoint, they've had so many series where it seems like a goaltender has gotten their head. And yes, are these goaltenders good and were they playing great? I would say absolutely, but felt like Carey Price got in their head during the COVID season. It felt like at times Korpisalo was in their head. It felt like the Bobrovsky thing was very real. Really, the only guy that has felt as though he's human against the Leafs is the best of them, Vasilevsky. They've gone, hey, we've actually humanized this guy all right. And so if I'm Boston and he gives you something again tonight, I would be showing, what would the other opposing fans of the opposing teams not want? I always think about this like the fourth down test, right? When you're watching a football game, what do you want the other team to, like, what are they hoping you do? Do they want you to punt or do they want you to go for it? And with this one, I think it's pretty obvious. If you polled Leaf fans, hey, who do you not want to see in game four? It's Swayman. It's Swayman, unless, he gets completely lit up tonight, and then obviously that changes everything. Okay, back to the big story, though, to the big story. What is the latest with William Nylander? Because this is now at the point, like, I'm sure you don't know. I've heard theories. I'm sure you've heard the same theories from people when you're trying to dig. But this has now gotten to the point where if he doesn't play, like, I need an explanation from the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And I hope we get one. My feeling is they didn't think this through enough. They didn't think their tack of no updates on William Nylander. We're not going to tell you. You know, they were trying to not even tell us if he was skating, if it was an illness or injury. It was just like, we're not giving you anything. And I think that backfired on them. I think they thought the less we say, the quicker it will go away. But what it does is just open up the door for more speculation from fans, for sure. But even reporters, you know, you start digging and then you start hearing some theories. And it's like, oh, well, that makes sense. And oh, that could be it. And then you present those, you hear something, but you can't confirm it. So you bring it to the Leafs and they're saying, we're not going to tell you anything. So it just begs more questions. And it's become a bigger deal than I think they thought it would be. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, it is a positive that he skated twice. He did not look great, though. He did not look like his normal self. So they're going to have a morning skate here at 10:30. I would expect he's on the ice. We'll see if he's in line rushes. We'll see how he looks. Does he look like he's laboring? Does it look painful to take one-timers? Or does he look like a guy who's good to go? And I also wonder if that win on game two bought them some time because we got 2 days off between games three and four. So if something's still nagging him, do they say, okay, the series is tied. We're not desperate. We're getting to their net a little bit more. Let's see if we can ride out one more game without him, give him what would be three more nights off, and then have him good to go for Saturday. Or if he's good to go, I imagine he's in the lineup. I mean, this is the most curious thing is he's been so durable. over the course of his career. And then all of a sudden this thing pops up. To my knowledge, the Leafs had no idea that something was bothering him. And maybe even Nylander himself had no idea something was bothering him down the stretch. Because if it was, they would have for sure rested him.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's perplexing. So I think that there's a couple things here. One, you're bang on with the distraction thing. It's game three for the Leafs of the Stanley Cup playoffs. This is a team that I do think tries to, well, let's just put it this way. They care about media narratives, okay? If you don't think that they do, oh boy, do they ever. And they starting to work this job was a real eye-opener in terms of how much they care. You went, they care that much about that? And the people went, oh, that's interesting. Okay. This is a disaster at this point if he doesn't play. Like, this is dominating the discourse. This is all people want to know. Do you know how many people have texted me? I can't imagine what your phone has looked like. The amount of people that have texted me about this, from people I didn't even know about, cared about hockey, to actual hockey people, where I'm going, you think I have a handle on this, a grip of this? Everyone is trying to figure out what's going on with William Nylander. And so, for it to be this much in the discourse, I think is a backfire, to the point where it's like, you guys just have to say something. You've got to provide some sort of timeline, some sort of a body area, anything. Two, I don't think that, I thought the same thing as you did when it came to the whole, well, maybe they get a couple of extra days. They can't think this way. This is Toronto Maple Leafs. This is playoff hockey. It's desperate now. There's no, oh, well, you bought time. It's, you got to win all these games immediately. Like, you need to field your best lineup. If you're looking back at this thing and William Nylander was at 80% and you lose this series in game seven because, you know, you go back to TD Garden, get dominated in your house of horrors, like, absolutely not. That is terrifying. But three is, I wonder if this actually is a bit of a tipping point for the NHL when it comes to this stuff, because it's not just, like, there's gambling interests, there's fan interests, and to me, I get why teams try to hide injuries, because the Stanley Cup playoffs are nasty and it's a grind, it's a long-ass journey, but this one is so murky and so weird, and people are so upset about it that I don't know if they can just continue to operate this way moving forward. Like, I actually wonder if this is going to come up in league meetings.
Yeah, I wonder. The only thing I would push back on your first point is, we don't know exactly what the injury is. It's like, can he play through it?
Yeah.
Or if he gets hit, does it make it worse?
For sure.
So that, you know, like, there's two kinds of injuries. One, it's just take a shot for the pain and push through and, hey, it's the playoffs. And the other is, if this guy gets crunched in the corner, he might be done for the series. So that's the only thing I would say, maybe he doesn't play if it's one of those type of injuries. As for the league stuff, I don't get any sense that they're changing. Like, if they took this stuff seriously about, you know, the way the NFL does, about you have to list what the injury is or have to list questionable or probable or whatever it is, they would have done that already, and they would enforce it with starting goalies, which might be even more important than some of the injuries. I mean, this one's big because it's a star player, but for starting goalies, that's huge.
True.
And they seem to be fine with it.
Mm. You know who's not fine with it? Every fan in the city right now. They're pulling their hair out.
Well, and it's not tit for tat. So Andrew Peak got hurt, and they came out and said he's week to week.
Yeah.
You know, they immediately, the very next morning, they're like, okay, we don't know yet. He's going to get a test. And then the next morning, Montgomery said he's week to week. Like, they're being, at least giving a timeline.
Yeah. Well, can I tell you something too? That's the other part of this that the Leafs should have recognized, is by being so murky with the Nylander injury and having it be like, oh, he's skating and he's coming out. It obviously gives the image that he's not tough enough to play through the pain. Like, they're aware of this, right?
And maybe I don't know. I wonder how they feel about it. Well, the thing that bothered me the most was on the off day between games one and two, they held a press availability at their hotel. Mm-hmm. So all the media went to the hotel, or not all, but most of the media went to the hotel because that's where you're going to get your interviews. And simultaneously, over at the practice facility, Nylander's skating with the scratches. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, look over here. We're talking over here.
Yeah.
And we don't really want you to go watch this guy skate and be looking at how much pain he's in or how he looks. Now, our buddy CJ, you know, because The Athletic had multiple reporters, they sent some to the Vale, and he hung out, and good on him, he hung out at the rink just to see if he'd catch a glimpse, and he did. But if he didn't do that and get some video, no one would even know that he skated. Like, it's very cloak and dagger.
It's so weird, man. It's so weird. Like, just say something. Just give people anything, truly, please. Like, so that they can, this is with everything, right? It's the not knowing that kills you. It's the thinking about stuff and the things that you're going through. And to me, this is just more damaging to the fans. I think that there's a case that it could be even more damaging to your team than it is to whatever the Boston Bruins are planning at this point, especially now that you have home ice. Okay, so speaking of the other stuff, though, or what other people are planning, do you think TJ Brody draws in tonight?
Yeah, I've been wondering about that. I'm guessing no, because they won, but I really thought they might have brought him in for game two. And the other thing is, I don't know how much it matters. Like, Lyubushkin hasn't blown me away, and I thought, this guy's indispensable. Liljegren hasn't blown me away. So I think it's great that he's the next man up. I think I'd be mildly surprised if they brought him in after a win. But, you know, it's pretty fascinating. He's your second highest paid defenseman. You look at the minutes during the regular season, and he's right up there below Morgan Riley. He felt like a really important part of the team. And now all of a sudden he can't crack your top six. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they want a puck mover and they want a right shot. And Brody's really struggled when he's played on the right side. So they're trying to give Liljegren some run. And I think a lot of his benefit is he curves the stick the right way. And then they like the toughness. And Brody defends with, when he's at his best, he defends with a smart stick and good positioning and never getting caught and staying at home. That's how he defends. He doesn't defend by physicality. And Bradford Living has a vision for this decor of being physical. And we've seen that with all the additions he's made, whether it's Benoit, Lyubushkin, or Edmondson. So I don't know if those guys are coming out. And I'll tell you, you go to the other room, talk to the Bruins. They're having, this is a different experience for them. They're used to the Leafs being soft. It's a good thing that they're matching them hit for hit, that they're grinding through, that they're not backing down. So in that respect, I think the new look of the D has been a positive. Benoit looks in a little bit over his skis too much, like a little bit like it looks like his first playoff series, which it is. So does he settle in, or is he a candidate to come out at some point? I wonder.
Yeah. So to me, they're not taking Liljegren out because of what you said, he's a right-hand shot and Brody playing on that side. I think it actually has more to do with Brody than it actually has to do with Liljegren. So you go, okay, so that's not the spot. They played Edmondson more than anyone other than Riley, so he's safe and secure. Like, they used him as a security blanket for the entire third period of game two. So you can bet your bottom dollar he's not the guy that's coming out, and you just outlined all the stuff with the physicality. Obviously, Morgan Riley's not coming out. Okay, so we've eliminated the right side, and we've eliminated two spots. To me, it just seems like the only guy that could come out is Benoit, that he would be the only adjustment that you would make. But, yeah, you're probably not doing something that bold after a win. So maybe one more game without him, unless Nylander comes back, and they view that as, well, we're already changing the lineup. Let's take a peek at this. But, yeah, to me, he doesn't really fit the series. And I agree with you about the physicality stuff, and I want to follow up on that in a second here. My only thing is, the only thing I can equate it to is, and people will probably joke that I do this with every guest, but sometimes you overqualify in this job when you're almost trying to impress someone. You get a guest on and you go, oh, damn, I can't believe that I have this person. You start almost trying to show off all the things you know, and it makes you worse as a host. And then after, you go, God, that was actually really embarrassing what I did. And I feel a little bit that when I'm watching the Leafs play physical against the Bruins, where you go, you don't have to impress them. The goal of this series is not to get the respective Brad Marchand and the handshake line. Like, just play your game and play physical, but don't let it go too far. But yeah, so you don't read into the Marchand comments as anything like he's playing head games? Because that's where my mind goes immediately.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the antenna go up every time he's in front of the microphone, right? Like, he's such a savvy veteran. It's like, What does he mean by this? And I think back to when he was talking about how this was at least a season ago, maybe two, talking about how Mitch Marner is one of his favorite players and how he loves his the skates he got for the All-Star game. And he was going over the top praising him. So anytime he compliments the Leafs, you start to wonder. But I do feel like that there's he's being a little bit genuine. I mean, maybe he's leaning into it in hopes that, you know, they get those comments in like, yeah, we're tough. Because they've been silly tough, right? Max Domi took some ill-advised penalties in game one. Tyler Bertuzzi, you know, they're lucky they killed that penalty. Mm-hmm. But him slashing him and, you know, did he embellish it? I'm pretty sure he did.
Yeah,
but
he did. He grabbed the wrong leg.
Yeah, yeah. But you give him an opportunity to embellish it, and the ref only half sees it, throws Bertuzzi in the box. Leafs penalty kill hasn't been that good. We might be talking about a different story if they don't kill that penalty. That was a massive kill. Mm. But that's a silly thing to do. And this is a guy who should know Marchand. He played with him. He knows his tricks. So they have to be careful. They just have to be smart. The penalty kill is not good enough to you know, overexert your toughness into times when it's not needed. And that's in the offensive zone. That's between whistles. Within the whistles, I like their toughness. I like their battle level.
Agree.
In the corners. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're clearly a more physical, tougher team that can respond. But to me, yes, the toughness is not going to be whether or not you do the Labushkin, you punch somebody in the face after a whistle because you're frustrated. It's like, no. Or the McCabe cross check in the back. It's like that stuff I'd rather avoid. I'm actually a little bit more forgiving, I think, of Bertuzzi's than others, because I think what he was trying to do there is basically even it up, like make such a scrum that they all of a sudden they're taking multiple bodies and it's all evened up. Because to me, Toronto was going to be on the penalty kill in that situation regardless, even before his play. They just decided, okay, now instead of a 5-on-3, we're going to take two of your guys and only one of theirs. But maybe, you know, maybe I'm off on that one. Austin Matthews, clearly the best player in the series. You look at all his stats, 5-on-5. He's been dominant from a shot standpoint. He gets that goal. It's brilliant. It feels like a kind of a breakthrough moment. You've watched this team from their inception. How different does it feel watching him to you right now than in years past?
Yeah, he's just so assured of himself.
Yeah.
You know, he's not frustrated. Like, what kind of stood out to me was his demeanor meeting with us in the dressing room after game one. So they lose. The building was going nuts. He had an opportunity to tilt the game. Swayman comes out, floating out of his crease. He pings a post, you know, give him that shot. 9 more times, he probably hits it 8, you know. And they go down and score. Like, it was a pivotal moment, and it came off his stick. And he didn't feel defeated by it. He didn't seem frustrated by it. He was still confident after game one, even though they lost. And then he basically dragged them to victory. And it was the goal, which unbelievable. Like, that's what you want. Big time player having a big time moment. Mm-hmm. But it was also, he created Domi's goal. He had a primary assist on Tavares' power play goal. He, you know, threw just as many hits as anyone else in the game. Yep. He skated more than anyone on the Leafs, including any defenseman. Like, he swiped a puck off the goal line and saved Samsonov at one point. Like, he was all over it. And the Bruins don't have that. I mean, Pasternak, yeah, he had a beautiful goal. Mm-hmm. You know, what a pass by Zacha. But, you know, he has not been the story of the series so far. Matthews has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. And it's very strange because clearly the play is at a very, very high level. And I was actually a little critical of him after game one because I went, hey, man, I'm over, hey, shot counter for you. And, oh, he played well. It's like you had an open cage and you missed it. Those things got to go in. Like you have to make those plays. If we're going to crush goaltenders for bad goals, then I'm gonna note that the best goal scorer on the planet missed a wide open net, making the play or not making the play. But watching these two games and now kind of pushing them together and the way that he seems to be carrying himself, yes, the way that he looks in interviews, as dumb as that sounds, but watching him on podiums versus in years past, he just looks at peace with himself, at peace with his game. He looks good on the ice. He feels dominant. It really looks like the player that we've been seeing in the regular season is translating to the postseason. Like the Leafs have by far the best player in this series. And yeah, it does feel like this is the growing up playoffs for him. What happens, I don't know, but I think that Leaf fans can at least come away with feeling optimism about that. The other part of it, though, is that his cohort, it's almost like, hey, Matthews is playing great, but it's almost why I want to take a picture with Armin so I look tall, you know, because Armin's shorter than me. So I go, hey, get in beside me, Armin, for the photo. So that people, how tall is JD? I have a photo of me and Jovinko. It's my favorite photo ever. It's like, look how tall I am. And Matthews looks even taller when he's next to Marner. And I don't mean that in terms of his actual height. I mean that in terms of the contrast in play. What do you think they do with Mitch to try to get him going at home? Is there more line loading with 34 at the expense of Domi, who has had really good chemistry with him? Like, how do they try to light a fire under him? Because so far through two games, it's been wildly disappointing.
Yeah, and remember, like, there was a time it's like, can this guy drive his own line in terms of Matthews? Mm. It's like, does he need Marner? And I think that's the biggest thing. He's proven he can drive his own line. And
unquestionably.
I just love that he has a couple kind of like dirtbag style players on his wings. Like it's kind of refreshing. It's a different look for his line. They're not going to mess with it, but absolutely. And we've already seen it in the first two games. When there's like an ozone draw, when there's certain times, he'll bump up Marner onto Matthews' line. And sometimes it's at the expense of Domi, but sometimes it's at the expense of Bertuzzi. I was looking into it. So I think he kind of alternates and give those guys an extra breath, give Marner a chance to maybe hopefully get his offensive game going by giving him some shifts with Matthews. But no way should they, do a complete flip of philosophy and just throw Matthews and Marner for the whole game. I think the onus falls on Marner to pick it up and help drive things with Tavares. And to be fair, yes, he doesn't have a point. He has not been great. He's getting paid to produce, and he hasn't produced yet. But what I would say is him and Tavares have gotten the Pasternak matchup for the most part. Mm. And they do have a rookie in Matt Nyes, I love the guy's heart, but he's getting run a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think the original plan before Nylander had this mysterious injury was to do a whole bunch of shifts with Nylander, Marner, Tavares.
For sure.
They were showing that down the stretch, and I think that's what they wanted to do. They thought we can spice in that sort of super line, super second line, a lot, and then how are the Bruins going to match that? Because the Bruins don't have the depth the Leafs do at forward and D. Like it's like, okay, who do you put McAvoy and Lindholm against if we're coming at you with that top six, if we split Matthews and Marner? But the Nylander injury is kind of throwing a wrench into that, mm-hmm. and they haven't found their groove. Like, if you look at the underlying numbers, the Tavares, Nyes, Marner line has been the worst on the Leafs.
Yeah.
And that includes the bottom six, right?
Yeah. No, the bottom six actually has been okay. They drew praise from Sheldon Keefe, and, you know, look at the – I think you actually wrote it in your latest article that it's, what, 12 to 5 shots for the fourth lines against each other? The Leafs are just dominating that matchup. So, the Leafs are liking what they're getting from their bottom six. It's just that's the group that's got to pull it together. And, you know, that's tough. You drew the matchup, and it's tough that Nylander isn't there to save you. But I would argue that, you got two guys making the over the $10 million threshold. Like, I'm sorry that you don't have a third guy. It's like,
it's fair. Yeah. No, the criticism's fair. Yeah. But the only thing I would say is, you know, sometimes you start going down that path of thinking.
Sure.
And then a third game gets played and one guy gets three assists and has some amazing penalty kill shifts. And then you're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have went so hard in that.
Guess what? I'll be happy to do it, Luke. I will be thrilled to do it. Pal. Hey, Luke, enjoy game three tonight, buddy. We'll be watching your Twitter account for Nylander updates. Thanks, bud.
Okay. Should be a good one.
See you, man. I got more thoughts on this Nylander thing, but I'm going to save them for later because I want to get to Pete Blackburn, host of the What Chaos Show. Are the Leafs and Bruins actually rivals?
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So, as I said to Luke, I'm not buying any of the Marchand compliments. Oh, they're so much tougher. Shut up. I don't even know why people in Toronto put a microphone in front of Marchand right now. Let the Boston people do that. You know why? Because I'm genuinely nervous that some of the Leafs go, thank you for the call in, Brad. We look up to you. We want to be like you. Anyways, Pete Blackburn, host of the What Chaos Show. Big Bruins guy. What's up, dude? How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I mean, it's game three. It's in Toronto. I'm nervous. Probably slept, I would say, 3-4 hours last night. Like, it's not comfortable times. Part of it is that I'm staying up late watching these games. Part of it is that I keep waking up thinking, oh my God, they're going to embarrass the city again. Please don't embarrass the city again. You know, normal stuff.
Yeah, that seems fair, given the history, given the team that you report, seems very fair.
Yeah.
I've been sleeping pretty nice.
Nice.
I'll say.
That's good.
Hasn't been too bad over here.
See, I was kind of hoping that you were going to say the opposite. I thought you were going to come on and go, you know, this feels different. Because, okay, I want to start with this. I don't know if you know this, but the Leafs haven't had a very good track record against the Bruins recently. Like, there's been a few playoff exits, and then there was this regular season where Toronto, you know, never held a lead against Boston. There's always been this big brother thing. We came into this series and I was talking to Claude Julien, your former head coach, the other day, and he's like, yes, it's rare for a head coach to come on and someone who's viable for other positions and say, yeah, there's a culture gap between these two teams. And so coming into the series, all this discussion, like guys like Marchand, they mentioned, yeah, they're our rival now. They've become our top rival. People in Boston writing articles about the Leafs being their rivals. It's weird to look at that from a Toronto's perspective, given the history between these two organizations. I usually feel like, you know, it can't be this one-sided. How does it feel to you? And do you think that that's something that is actually echoed by most Bruins fans?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. And I'm surprised by it, too, just based off, like, I was grown up with, you know, Montreal as the team that all Bruins fans should hate the most. And
for sure.
You know, first dozen years of my life, that was the case, but you know, Montreal is not relevant right now. And even if the Bruins continually get the best of Toronto, that's the team you're still seeing in the playoffs, like over and over and over again. And you know, it gets heated and you know, and even though I always have to remind people of this, and I'm sure I don't have to remind you, but like, even though the Bruins always come out on the winning side, the series always goes 7 games and it is always an absolute torturous ride for 2 weeks before you actually get to that 7-game and come out on the other side. So regardless of the constant results being in Boston's favor, I do think that it's a rivalry regardless.
I hated that answer because it felt like you were tapping me on the head being like, and you guys get so close though. You guys get so close. You guys are always so close. And I'm just getting patted on the head. You're like, it's torturous for us. It's hard on us too. And then we win. So it's a little less torturous after that part of it happened. But before that part, oh boy, is it torturous for us. Okay, tell me how torturous it is right now. Because that's really what I want to know is like, what is the general mood in Boston? Because here, I got to tell you, there's a lot of cautious optimism about what we've seen so far through these two games, despite the Leafs putting together like all of the bad things that they do in game one.
Yeah, I mean, game one was tough, but I mean, the way that you bounce back in game two, that's super encouraging. And they were certainly the much better team in game two and just skated circles around the Bruins. I was not concerned very much going into game two, obviously, after what happened in game one. But when you look at sort of the Bruins, like, lost every battle, lost every race to the puck, lost the battles along on the walls. Like, their zone exits were horrible. They just did not look like a good team for most of game two. So that's a bit concerning. But, you know, on the other side of that same coin, the Bruins were hanging tough for that game, regardless of them playing pretty poorly. So that's a good sign if you want to look at it that way. It just kind of depends on how you want to view it. For any Bruins Leafs series, though, like, it's hard to expect where it's going to go next. And so, you know, through two games, you've seen both teams look far better than the other. And so it's kind of a wash in my mind.
Yeah. To me, this is the prevailing thought in terms of optimism as a Leaf fan is they've gotten nothing from Marner. Nylander hasn't even played in this series. Boston has gotten really incredible goaltending through two of these games and Toronto's leaving with a split. And I just feel as though Toronto is the more skilled and deeper team. And this is kind of the big part of it is Boston just doesn't look overly impressive outside of the goaltending, the structure, the coaching. The players themselves, like Marchand does not look like old Marchand that I'm used to watching. And Pastrnak, I had Vlado Zhenzawa on a couple, like last week. He mentioned that they're not sure about his health status. He doesn't feel as dominant as he has against the Leafs, where he's just been, you know, a primary killer, goal or no goal. And I'm curious, like, who you feel the best about right now when it comes to the Bruins? Like, who you're watching and you're going, oh, man, I'm loving his game right now. This is reason for us to believe that we're going to beat them.
Honestly, it's probably been Pavel Zacha. Zacha is a really good player. You obviously, you saw the assist from game two. But, like, you know, Pavel Zacha is just a really kind of detail-oriented player and always kind of finds himself where he needs to be. And, you know, I think that's kind of the story of this team as a whole. Like, obviously, you have guys like Pastrnak, and if you want to say that Brad Marchand is still in the elite level, like, this isn't a team full of elite skilled guys. It's detail-oriented guys that play to a system and constantly find themselves in a position to succeed because of that. That just hasn't really been there, you know, for even game one. Like, you look at a lot of their damage done in game one, it wasn't on 5-on-5. So, like, I just look at game two, their details were not close, and their effort level was not on par with Toronto. And you can kind of see the results that come from that. They're not a team that can kind of lay back because they don't have the skill to overcome what they might lack on any given night in terms of the details.
Where's the fan base's confidence at with the goalie plan?
I think it's pretty confident right now. I think that putting Ullmark in game two kind of let people breathe a little bit and let them sit back and say, you know, they're going to do the rotation. And unless one of these guys stands on his head, and then maybe he'll get the next game. But I think that putting Ullmark in game two answered some questions pretty quickly.
Mm, yeah. I got to tell you again, from here standpoint, people want to see Ullmark. I know he was the better goalie down the stretch. I know he's a Vezina winner. I know it sounds almost stupid to say it, but yeah, Swayman's just had Toronto's number, and they've gone to these dips where one goalie has just owned them and they have not been able to overcome it. And to me, it's like Swayman is the guy that might have the best chance of doing that to Toronto. Again, we'll see tonight. Okay, so I do something on my show called the Jared Sullinger test, and it's because of Boston, actually. It's because when Jared Sullinger left the Celtics and he came to the Raptors, there were Raptors people going, man, Jared Sullinger, this is pretty nice. Like, this is kind of what they need. This is sort of the addition that they need in, like, Ohio State and all these different things. And then you looked at what Celtics fans were saying, and it was good riddance, doesn't say healthy. And I'm like, this is what you get. You get the real information from, sometimes fans are nuts, but when a free agent departs or a player gets traded, their reaction to that player is very likely the way that your fan base is going to feel about that guy. And I'm curious how you guys feel right now watching Tyler Bertuzzi up on Matthews' line playing well, and what the fan base's affiliation is with him. Like, because again, he was there for a short time. They did get bounced in the first round, but he was your playoff hero in the first round. Like, how do you guys perceive Tyler Bertuzzi?
Yeah, I think that most fans still like Tyler Bertuzzi and still wish that he was here. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that Tyler Bertuzzi, for all intents and purposes, has, like, Bruins DNA to him. And I think that fans fell in love with him even in the short time that he was here. And, you know, you look back at sort of the playoff numbers from last year. I know it wasn't a long run for the Bruins, obviously, but Tyler Bertuzzi was their leading goal scorer, was constantly finding himself, like, in those dirty areas and cleaning up. And that's how you find success for playoff hockey. So I don't think that there's, like, any real, like, hatred towards Tyler Bertuzzi. I could be wrong on that. I don't want to speak for everybody in Boston, but, like, I think it's just more annoyance that he's on the other side now.
Listen, this is what you're doing, all right? You're speaking for everybody in Boston. Get over it. This is what's happening. You're the representative. You're the delegate. This is what's happening right now. Like, it's, you're already in it. It's too late when you agreed to do this interview. Who do you hate then? Like,
yeah.
Who are the people, who are the Maple Leafs that you hate?
Probably Max Domi.
See, that's good. That's the answer.
He's more annoying than Bertuzzi. And through the first couple games of the series, I know he had a great game too. Honestly, everybody's talking about Matthews, but yeah. Domi had a great game as well. But like Domi in game one, it felt like he was just trying to do too much. And it was like he had this mentality that he was going to come in and be a difference maker physically and was just acting like an idiot and putting his team kind of behind the eight ball. So Domi, I think, is the more annoying one on that line.
Yeah, dude, listen, Domi is playing to Leaf fans in the most perfect way possible. Like, everybody my age loved his dad's teams and loved the scrappiness of Ty. And now he's the one guy on the team that, in recent vintage anyways, has really figured out how to tap into getting Leaf fans to love him with the quotes, the way that he plays, the toothless smile, all of it. People are like, God, this is exactly
what game one.
No, game one, he frustrated people with some of the penalties, but at least, you know, he was bringing some energy to a team that oftentimes has been criticized as being lifeless. But now that you're saying Bruins fans hate him, like that he is actually having the agitator effect, that is even, like, his contract keeps going up and up. You should have seen the smiles behind the glass when you said that answer from the guys that work on the show. When you said Max, it was like, they lit up. They lit up like it was like a beautiful woman walked in here and they were like, oh my God, like that was how happy they were. So no, thank you for that. That was the perfect answer that somebody from Boston could have given us. So yeah, like you take the good with the bad with players like that, but it's the same with Marchand, right? Like he's taking dumb penalties for you, right? And I'm not trying to compare the two in terms of their actual ability. Like one's a Hall of Famer, a Team Canada guy. The other one is far, far from that. But that's what you want to have as a fan is a guy you love, but that other teams despise.
Yeah, especially this time of year. Like, yeah. You need those guys. You need to be an annoying team. Like, if you're going through a 7-game playoff series and there's nobody on the other side that hates one of your guys, then you're kind of doing it wrong. you better be extremely skilled if you're not going to piss off the other team and piss off another fan base. So that's my service to you guys, is to drive up Max Domi's price this offseason yeah. So that he can't stick around.
Yeah, we're like, nice. Thank you. Hurt the cap situation. Thank you so much. That is very, very Toronto. Everything is connected to the contracts. Okay, so last thing before you go. Thing you're most confident in and thing you're most afraid of.
Thing I'm most confident in the series, I'm assuming we're talking about.
Yeah, not life in general. I mean, you can share that if you're feeling vulnerable, but otherwise, no, you can just stick to the series.
No, I mean, thing that I'm most confident in is got to be the goaltending. It's got to be the goaltending. It's been the Bruins' kind of strength for the last 2 years, and now that the goalie rotation is in effect, and we've seen good performances from both these guys. Swayman was maybe a little bit better in game one, but I thought Allmark was really good in game two. That's the most confident thing. That worries me the most is just like the Bruins might just get run over by Austin Matthews in the series based off of what I saw in game two. Matthews was a monster and the best player on the ice by far. And sometimes a guy like that, if a guy is as good as Matthews is, he can be the difference in a series that might be as close as this one. So not a great sign in game two that he looked so dominant. But again, it's game two and these series always go game seven. So it could be an entirely different narrative by the end of the series.
You know, since you're generous with the time today, this is the positive spin for you with the Matthews stuff is Olympic hockey is coming back. And it's going to hurt
he
when
will
those,
be mine.
Yeah, those USA chants,
mine.
When you get to have him, it's going to hurt all of us. And yeah, I don't love it. Like the USA chants and then him scoring a goal and me being reminded that that's who he's going to play for hurts. Like, yeah, we're working on it up here. We're working on it. Hey, Pete, thanks so much for the time, brother. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Take care, dude. Host of the What Chaos Show, Pete Blackburn. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's come back. I got one more thought on the Nylander thing, which I'm sure Sid does too, because Sid Sixero is coming up here in a second. But and talking to Luke today, the backfire element of this is super interesting, and I think there's an even larger part to it, and also there's a lot of pressure on the Toronto Maple Leafs. There's also a lot of pressure on the fans. Next. Okay. I like how the song is. You know, here, listen, because that's what I want you to do right now is listen. The Nylander story is stupid. The way the Leafs have handled it is stupid. And I'm glad I had Luke on today because I'm not there. I'm not boots on the ground like Luke Fox. And I know some of you are like, what are you supposed to do? They're supposed to tell you the injury. And then he'll get hurt by the Bruins. He's hurt. He's hurt. He's hurt. Shut up for a second. Listen. The way that they have rolled this thing out has most reasonable people thinking that the decision is in William Nylander's hands. Okay? And them not coming out and going, them saying no updates, no updates, and then he's out there skating, and then he's not taking line rushes, and then he's scratched. What do you think the implication of this is? Like Luke said, everyone starts spinning their own theories. And so, yes, is there a practical element to this, which is hiding whatever it could end up being? Although once it's all over and done with and we actually find it out, if that's actually not the case of this could have gotten worse thing, it's going to be very, very strange. But the way that it kind of looks optically is the Leafs are all right. This is a team that has more PR than any group in the NHL. They are more concerned about it, more invested in it. And if this was the best plan of attack of just no update on Willie and then try to do these like little weird shadow tactics of bring the media over somewhere and then have him skate, but then announce that he's not playing in the game and there's like a slight dissemination of, well, he could be back in the series. Because that's the other part of it too is pretty much everybody that's anybody has gotten that tidbit, which is he's out, but he's expected to play. Like Bobby McMahon, you know, there's no updates needed because he's not coming back in the series. But with Nylander, there's been kind of a quiet implication that he was a little stiff. He should be ready to go. And I'm not saying this. I want this to be very clear. I'm not saying that I think that William Nylander is not tough enough for that he's not willing to play through the pain like other players are, because that's kind of ridiculous. But there's, you can see how people get there, right? You can see how people are looking at this and saying they've put it in his hands for a reason. Like they're not taking the decision out of it. They're not going, Willie's not playing tonight. Willie won't be playing tonight. They're letting him skate. They're seeing how he feels. And you go, oh, it's going to be practical. Well, if it's that bad, why wouldn't they just simply say he won't be available? Just like the Bruins just did it with Peak. He's week to week. He's out. And maybe they're more conclusive. Maybe this is just like a really weird, really difficult thing. But man, oh man, it's just, it's not a good distraction. And it has become a distraction. And you can blame the media all you want, blah, blah, blah. This is a huge story anywhere. This is a huge story anywhere. And people would be saying the same things everywhere. That is just a fact. And so, yeah, I got to wonder too, the players are probably locked in. I'm not worried when they get on the ice, like, are they thinking about the Nylander stuff? But you know how life works is you lose energy in certain ways and it can affect you in another place. And so I am kind of curious how much the players are being asked about this stuff and how they feel waiting and wanting to hear the update and what their communication's like with William Nylander. Like, these things seem relevant to me. But whatever. It's probably just all a media concoction, caring about a guy who was basically a 100-point scorer this year. Basically one of their core players and core pieces. That is the level of optimism, though, that I have is, again, Toronto doesn't have him. They haven't had him. And after game one, you felt, man, they need him. And you haven't felt that way this time around, at least after the last game. So that's something to be said for that. But yeah, at this point, I'd rather just hearing like, hey, he's ruled out the team to go. He's not ready to go. He's ruled out tonight instead of the no update. And you pick your own, you choose your own adventure with what is going on with this guy and twisting yourself into a pretzel. Maybe, yeah, maybe I'm the only one who's doing it. So I don't know if you fans have paid attention to some of the other Stanley Cup playoff matchups, but in Edmonton and in Vancouver and in Winnipeg, they are getting lauded for the way that they have shown up and supported their hockey teams. And it's a lot of the same stuff, right? Public gatherings for these games. Winnipeg does the whiteout, but it was a madhouse in those arenas. You should have seen, if you weren't watching yesterday, and it gets quiet sometimes when the team's trailing. I think the Winnipeg fans were shell-shocked, especially yesterday. But you should have heard that arena when the Winnipeg Jets kill off a 4-minute power play. And then, boom, they put one in the back of Colorado's net. And it was nuts in there. And some of the other buildings have been great, too. This isn't just the Canadian markets. Like, the scenes from Carolina when they came back and ripped the hearts out of the New York Islanders. That was incredibly loud too. But I've been saying this for a while, and I'm going to continue to say it again. One of the, I think, recent issues with this team is there's not the same connection with the players and the fan base as there has been in years past. And part of that is social media, and you're more likely to soak up the bad than the good. And so if you're a player and you've got it, which all of these guys do, and you're looking at your mentions or you're reading the stuff, it's like you're seeing the haters and you're going, man, this isn't worth it. There's more media contingent here for sure. Fine, whatever that's worth. And they're harder on you than they would be in Anaheim. And so that's a part of it too. It's, there's drawbacks here, right? Taxation is tougher here. You are living in Canada. Even for these rich players, like real estate, there's certain things at play for these guys where their money is not going as far as it would in other places. They're the same as you and me in that regard, just, you know, different in terms of the things that they're looking at. But one thing you're supposed to have, one thing you are absolutely lock it down supposed to have in a Canadian market is when you go to a Stanley Cup playoff game, it's a zoo. It's a zoo here because the fans go crazy for it. And I think that the Leafs barn has been fine. It's been okay. It's probably sometimes overly criticized because it's a soft and easy target, but it can be a bit of a graveyard. And it has grown to have a reputation as a place where when things start to go wrong, you can feel the energy of the fan base get to the players. And I'm not making excuses for this team. Like, they're the ones who have to show up. They're the ones that are getting paid. You're the ones paying to see them. They've got to show up, do their jobs. And I think if they do, that Leaf fans will be loud. But if you are going tonight, remember how lucky you are to be there. Appreciate how you are. Even if, you know, I'm sure you worked really hard to get into that building. Sure, you've done a lot of things to accomplish being in those seats. But God, I would say have a little bit of point of pride. Like, look at those other Canadian markets and say, this is the one place where you can actually have a bit of an impact. And I know this is probably like a little cheesy to do this, but man, the little civic pride here. Looking at Winnipeg, looking at Vancouver, looking at Edmonton, the way those arenas are, don't you want that here? Don't you feel like that can have some kind of an edge here? Anyways, stand up and stay loud tonight if you're going down to the hockey game. Sid Sixero, Breakfast Television. What's up, man? How are we doing? You going?
No.
You're a big wig. You could go. That's kind of, you know, that's a mark against you, actually, is like you could easily go. You could go.
I think, no, let me rephrase that. I probably could go.
Probably.
You are correct.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Oh.
But look, I got to, like, school nights for me are different than they used to be.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's fine.
But I mean, and I need me some Elliot Freeman intermission. Yeah. I can't not have a little Freege and a little Bieksa, a little Ron. I got to say, first off, is this when, like, Mike Feud and Christopher Steig the last 2 days, I have to praise your rant? I was listening to you. Nice rant.
Chris didn't praise my rant, actually. So.
I don't know. I thought he praised.
No, he didn't praise. He tries to cut me down. Honestly, he tries to cut me down. And I do my best, but it's tough. You know, when you have people in your circle that
you know
how it is. There's some people that they're,
yes,
you know.
I know how it is.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you.
I hate it. But we love those people because we need those people.
Yeah,
we do. But look, here's, you know what? Let's get into it. Because I'm still shook at the cover of the Toronto Sun that I just saw like an hour ago.
Yeah.
Did you catch that?
Yeah.
I read Simmons' piece. Like, the cover's way worse than the piece.
Of course.
And it's not like Steve was kind. Because Steve was just spinning some actual facts.
Yeah.
But wow. Anyway, I want to get to that in a second.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not on you with on the crowd tonight.
Okay.
I'm not. I can't. You're right. It's been electric in other markets. 100%. 100%. This is the moment. This crowd has been cultivated by this team. The team has made them what they become, which is nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're ready to explode at any given time. Like, social media back in 2015 was the same kind of as it is now. But what changed with the Jays? Jays said to hell with it. And the whole place got behind them. It's not hard in this city. It's not. Go out and do your job. Go out. That arena tonight, it's never going to be TD Garden for noise to that level, to just start organically. It just isn't like that. But this is the two-game stretch, JD. I don't give a damn what that crowd is doing or not doing.
Mm.
It's on the guys. I've had it with that argument. I've had it. And you're right. It's an engaging one, and we can talk about it for hours. It is not the responsibility of this crowd to wind them up. Mitch Marner woke up this morning, and he was pseudo on the cover of a newspaper in this city with the title The Invisible Man.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not your motivation, Dave in 124 isn't going to get you going. That's not happening. So for once, I'm going to blow right past the crowd thing, because I'm usually right there with you.
Yep.
I'm not there now.
Okay.
The stakes are way higher, and these guys got to be adults and go out and do their jobs. That will get the crowd behind you in ways you haven't seen before in this city if you do it for a month and a half.
Yeah. Don't disagree with you. Don't disagree with you. This is on the players. This isn't on the fans. I don't think that they're the ones who lace them up. I don't think that they're the ones who get the millions of dollars. Completely agree. Players need to go out there, be self-motivated, and find a way to unlock it. What I think I'm driving at more is I don't know if the players – you hosted the Conn Smythe dinner, and I've been thinking about this since then, dude. This is a take that was spawned from that evening, watching those older Maple Leafs, watching Sittler talk about what it meant to be a Leaf, watching Tiger talk about what it meant to be a Leaf. Those guys and the connection that they feel to this team and the community that they felt with this team, I don't think it's the same. And part of that is era. But when you go to this arena, it is very corporate. It can be very sterile. You've been to a lot of these games. I've been to a lot of these games. The arena does not have the feeling sometimes of, holy crap, it's a crazy raucous fan. You know where you're more likely to get that when you're a Leaf fan, where you feel that connectivity? It's where they saw it in Buffalo this year, where the Leafs went down to Buffalo. They had this incredible night, and they see the fans, and they go, oh, right, these are the crazy diehards that love this team. I do want that. I do want that connection between these players and this fan base to happen, and I think the best shot is come Stanley Cup playoffs, because I do think that more of the diehards show up for these games. And if you look back at, you know, the Missing Curfew account does a really good job of this. They take like old clips all the time and they fire them up on social media, and I go, oh yes. And when you see those early 2000s playoff crowds, you know, when the Leafs were routinely in the playoffs and having some measure of success and were extremely liked and there was no social media, the arena was, it kicked ass. It was crazy in there. It was a madhouse in there. So, no, I hope that both things can be true. I hope the players do their jobs, and I hope that, yeah, the fans feel connected, stay loud, and, yeah, that the players on the ice understand, like, what this team actually means to this city and what it means to the vast majority of these fans. Okay, let's get into the Marner thing then. You think that was unfair? Because I looked at that, and I just kind of giggled, and I'm like, yeah, that's what they do with these headlines. Like, it's provocative, and they try to get this exact reaction on social media. But I do think it's funny that this particular writer incites such strong feelings from social media when literally everybody, including myself, has been criticizing Mitch Marner for the last 48 hours. Like, nothing has changed.
Like, how? Hey, Steve, that's for us. Leave that alone.
Yeah, like everyone's
had
this.
It's a ridiculous thing. Yeah. You're right. Like, you're bang on in the take. Like, that's the whole Steve Simmons brand, and it is what it is.
Yeah.
But, again, that column he wrote that they posted yesterday, I read it last night.
I didn't read it yet.
It's not. It's kind of not unfair.
Okay.
Like, he's just going, like, what's wrong with saying he has one goal in his last 11 playoff games?
Nothing.
Nothing.
In fact, you should probably mention it more. Imagine this was New York, and this was the Jets.
Oh my God.
Like,
imagine if this was New York. Like, it's this. But this is what bothers me. Like, that column last night is as strong as you're going to see in the city. Mm-hmm. It's as strong as you're. And in the column, Steve, that also admits he's one of the best wingers in the National Hockey League statistically, and has been for years. Like, all the things are true. But there was something about this moment, there was something about this stretch with Mitch that is just, it just feels different. Hmm. And it's the contract coming up.
Yep.
And everyone knows what's going on here. And I still think fans have fully grasped what Keith Pelley is going to mean here. But it feels like there's a lot on the line. Like, Matthews has won over the crowd. He's Russell Crowe in Gladiator.
100%.
He's won over the crowd.
Yes.
And he's won his freedom from the press.
Yes.
Mitch has not done that.
Actually, it would be great if they chanted Maximus tonight if he scores. I just want to say, like, that would be great.
hopefully, I'm going to catch that on TC or a Turner Classic coming up. I love that movie.
Oh, yeah.
It just feels very unique. Like, it feels like these are the most important two games of Mitch's career in this city, in that building.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to put that on one guy who plays like 31% of the hockey game. But that's where we're at. And if and I've been thinking about this ever since I saw the Toronto Sun cover today. Mm-hmm. Is that unfair? I don't think it is, because everything Mitch has asked of the city and the organization, he's got.
Mm-hmm.
No hometown discount. He's gotten to play with 34. And for the most part, he's been given a lot of rope here. Now, I go back to that tweet from earlier this year, and I know you can cite who wrote it because I can't. Who threw the tweet out there about a stat with Mitch? And at the end, he wrote, a local guy with those numbers, surely he is beloved. Do you remember that tweet?
I do remember this tweet, but I can't say.
It was a classic tweet.
Yeah, yeah, it really was. It was a banger. I saw it and I felt deep jealousy because I went, this is a tweet I could have had. You know, like I can't do a lot of tweets. But that one I was like, damn, I could have gotten that one. That was just a really smart.
I know what you're saying. Yeah. I thought the same thing. It was just really smart.
Yeah, it was.
Sitting there, just a really, if you could smell the feeling of the city, it was just right there.
Yeah.
But I believe now my concern, look, I might be one of the few people in the city that believes this because this is how it goes. When a guy's getting piled up on sometimes, he does come through.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mitch is getting on the board.
Mm.
And I think he's getting it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm afraid of is if the booing starts.
Mm. That's interesting, the booing. Okay, so I actually think that this is a super fascinating conversation for a multitude of different reasons. But let me just start by saying this. I'm going to do a couple of qualifiers here. One is that I think in general, when it's a day like today, there's a certain section of the fan base that even hears us talking about it, and they're like, please just be positive and just say good things. It's a day of you're doing a doom spiral, or you're doing like a negativity talk, and you're doing a thing. And it's like, we're very conditioned now, I think, through social media, because everything is so polarizing, and all the algorithms work that way, where it's like, the only reason that you're actually seeing it, if you don't follow that person, you're not there at that exact time, is because people have taken a stance on it. And usually that stance is you've picked one side or the other, right? And so that's how something like this ends up rising to the top. Mitch Marner being one of the highest paid players in hockey, part of the most visible hockey team in this country, one of the best wingers in the entire game, but never having really a long stretch of awesome play in the postseason is a huge, huge story. He was good last year against Tampa, and then he failed to show up in the next series. Like, he didn't have an impact on it. You go year over year, he started off against Boston, it was good, and then he had a drought, and then it was finally fine against Tampa. Of course these questions are here. The question has always been, does this core four work? And when we're examining these games, and he's the guy that's underperforming the most and who isn't, you know, over or past his prime, let's say, when it comes to John Tavares, clearly he's going to get discussed. I actually don't think that the media here is particularly hard. I think that for the most part, it's fairly reasonable and educated, and most fans just want authenticity, and there really isn't the same market as there is in the States for just like being hot for the sake of being hot. The problem is that we have so many people. Like, we have so many people that provide a take that when you look at the end of it, it's like everyone has an opinion on Mitch Marner, and a lot of people end up having the same thing, and then it gets to a point where it feels like bullying. It feels like a guy is underwater with this thing. And it's like, no one has an agenda here. No one's trying to communicate this in a way that's unfair. People are just trying to share their opinion. And the opinion about Mitch Marner right now is that he's been the invisible man for this team in the playoffs.
He has. And I know the points are there. We can have a whole separate discussion about, okay, well, if he's a point of game guy, how important are the goals this time of year?
Uh-huh.
Like, because I go back and forth on that too. I mean, like, okay, you're a point of guy in the playoff. Are we talking goals? Are we talking like third period tied to two goals? Like, what are we talking about with the points?
Mm-hmm.
You rack them up in blowouts all you want, but what are we really talking about? So I sometimes struggle with that, but I just feel like this is the weird moment with Mitch where it's not media contrived. My wife went through a grocery store yesterday. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
She walks in within 3 minutes in the produce section. She overhears two people talking, and all she hears is, Marner has to get going.
Out of town or in the series?
No, in the series.
Yeah.
In the series.
Because I've heard the other one a lot.
No, we've all heard the other one. But this guy was like, Marner's got to get on the board. This is not a social media-driven thing.
Mm-mm.
This is not a media-driven thing. This is the thing that has to happen, or they don't win.
Mm-hmm.
And any fan, any media member, any member of that organization knows it. The fans want what's due to them, considering what's been given to Mitch, which has been a lot. They see it with Austin. Willie blew everyone's doors in to start the year. You kind of saw it with him. Mm-hmm. And Willie's been the best playoff guy, notoriously, on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's all coming to a head here.
Totally agree.
And it's not your typical, stereotypical, oh, that's just this, that, or other. No. It's any fan who's watching. It's your paying customers who are watching. People who will be there tonight who are watching. And they've said, now is the time. We're not doing the thing where we just pay you for a first-round loss anymore. We're kind of tired of that. So now what? And they want the success. And they want Mitch to have hero moments. And they want all the things. And I think that's all fair. I just think that's part of to me, the discussion is it fair or unfair? No. It is super fair. Now, I wouldn't have put the kid on the cover of a newspaper. I thought that was a little much, but that's what that newspaper does.
Yeah,
is what it is.
Because
I thought the column was kind of fair from Steve. Sure. I didn't think it was over the top.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like New York Post, Toronto Star. Like, that's the way that they get engagement. Newspapers are, you know, fighting for their lives. A lot of media is fighting for their lives, and this is the currency that we've created. And so, I don't know. I don't get as upset as other people do with that. I guess it's more like part of the game that I just kind of wipe away. But no, you're bang on with Mitch, dude. Like, you're feeling what I think everybody's feeling here. And again, that is the vast majority of what I think are Leaf fans right now, is what you said there about he's been handed everything. And, you know, there's another part of this too. Max Domi, who does resonate with this fan base, who people do think has the stuff that Mitch doesn't in terms of like the get it factor, right? He had success with Austin Matthews. Austin Matthews went without Mitch Marner, and guess what he did? He still got damn near close to 70 goals. He was still dominant throughout that stretch of play without Mitch Marner. So now it used to be one thing to go, well, it's a little disappointing, but it's these two guys together, and they're always attached to the hip, and Matthews needs him, and he wants him, and how much of his success is Marner's success, blah, 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 blah. Now we've seen proof of concept that Austin Matthews can continue to dominate, including these two first playoff games, without the assistance of Mitch Marner on his line. And now we're also seeing Mitch play without Austin Matthews in hopes that he can drive a line, which is the expectation of a player of his salary, and it isn't happening. So you're right. He can win everybody over if he dominates. He can win everybody over. He can shut everybody up. But just, you got to do it. There's no more. It's the same thing that with Vladdy right now. Like, there's no more promise. It's do. Go and do. And then people will finally start to get behind you.
100%. But, like, even Vladdy's play last night, not to divert too much on you, but, like, even Vladdy's play last night, I wasn't as upset at that as I was at the stat I read in my timeline, that he has one extra base hit in his last 51 at-bats.
Yeah.
What is that?
I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
It's like, do we need, like, do we need Jose, Edwin, and Donaldson in the dugout to help him? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah.
It's getting worse.
Yep.
Anyway, but this pressure is real. You want, if Vladdy wants nine figures out of this organization,
same thing.
That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the only good thing I saw the Jays do in the offseason was take them to arbitration, even if they lost. I don't care. You do not just at face value say no problem. No. The city has a terrible history of doing that, and someone has to end the insanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thankful the Jays did that. It was the only correct thing they did the entire offseason, that and Justin Turner.
You know what, though, Sid? It's like when some of this does come down to the fact that now we get everybody's opinion and we see what everyone has to say about something. And again, we do – it's human nature to – like, it's part of your biology to see negative criticism and take it in more than positive criticism. Some people think it's like a survival instinct thing, right? Like, if someone tells you, don't go over there, you're going to listen to it more than go over there. It's just tied into our DNA. But now we see everything, so the breadth of opinion, so you end up taking in a couple of people who are, like, upset because you'll be critical of a player. But I do think that a large part of why people are afraid of the level of criticism that a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. gets or a Mitch Marner gets, because those two guys are both in the eye of the storm right now, is that there still is always been an inferiority complex with this city and sports. And some of that has now pivoted to the Toronto Maple Leafs as well. Because before this core four, it was always like, well, if you ever get the Stars, man, they would really want to play here and they would want to stay here and you'd want to win here. And now we've kind of grown up and we've seen this play out and you go, eh, you know, it's a bit of a myth. Like, they'll play here for the most amount of money, right? Like, they'll do that. But to just be here or put a price on Toronto that is, oh, winning here means more, like that has kind of evaporated and dissipated. And so I think that part of this, when people stand up and they go, hey, don't even mention this. Be talking about the game. Be talking about how the power play can get better or how great Austin Matthews is or focus on something else. And there's too much pressure on Vladdy. Some of it comes from the same fans that have seen, right, like Vince Carter leave and go, oh, my God, you know, we can't. We're basically like, we can't keep a good partner. We're insecure. And so it bleeds through, I think, in these moments where it's fair to criticize athletes who don't show up in big moments. It's fair to criticize athletes who do it repeatedly, and it's fair to do your job and try to break down why they're not doing that. But yeah, just for some people, they're like, this might be one little notch in the ledger that pushes them out the door.
But that, and like, I had someone say to me the other day, he goes, I'm worried about this Mitch and Vladdy stuff. And I said, for the obvious reasons or for other reasons? He goes, other reasons. I go, what do you mean? He goes, if you're going to take the kind of heat sometimes you can take in a Canadian city or in Toronto, you better not be paying those kind of taxes too.
Yeah. Listen, the money
double
thing
whammy
is
no one talks about. Yes.
Oh, I talk about it all the time.
Double whammy. No, you do. Yeah, but not a ton of other folks. So.
Yeah.
No, I'm aware. Like, once in a while, we'll hear a story about a lawsuit and Tavares and Batista and whatever.
Yeah,
but like,
you're like, wait, what?
It's a story no one wants to really get into. But
no, it's pretty easy. You just go look at what the $10 million means to the guy in Vegas versus what the $10 million means to the guy in Toronto. You can figure out real fast with a Google search.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you can. Yeah. Yes, you can.
You can go look at what a house looks like in Las Vegas in the suburbs and what you can buy for a couple million bucks versus what you get for a couple million bucks in Toronto. It's not hard to figure out. I think most people are pretty hip to it now.
For sure, for sure. Where do you want to take it? I had a Domi thing. Where do you want to take
no,
it?
No, go there.
What do you want to do? Because I was listening to you. I was listening to a few people over the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
The notion of Sheldon Keefe ripping Max after the first game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of it either, but it worked.
And he was right.
And he was right. Like, Max was a complete, like, stayed out of the box and was amazing.
Yep.
That's all Sheldon's kind of talking about, right? Like, I
two
just,
huge points.
I didn't get the vitriol at Sheldon, a guy who's been ripping his players publicly all yeah. season with the energy of a horse running in an open field.
Yeah,
just it's a new world for Sheldon. I doesn't have to walk back anything.
No,
and I thought that one Saturday was well deserved. Like, I didn't feel towards that the way some people felt. Now, I had to see how it played out the next game, because if Max was a disaster, I'd have a different opinion, but he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
He took every ounce of that criticism, which was a short one. He played his game the way he did, stay out of the damn box, and he was amazing. I thought it worked, which is why I was a little confused with how strongly people felt towards him.
So did you see the PK Subban stuff?
I missed it. Forgive me.
Okay, well, I thought that's what you were in anyway, because he went on Pat McAfee, and he called it, I think we actually have the quotes, Jose. It's like, he's called it, I think he said it was a gong show. Yeah, play, you got the clip? Can you spot it up for Sid? Because, yeah, play this one, because I think this is what you are driving at. You can play it right now.
It's a bit of a gong show in Toronto with the media and the coach. I don't think he handles the media correctly in Toronto. If you want my real opinion on it, I don't think he handles it well. And that's just my opinion. That doesn't mean that it's wrong the way he handles it. That's just my opinion. I don't think he handles it well. And who knows? I don't know. Players get into it with coaches all the time. I'm not going to speculate that. But what I do need to say is this. The Toronto Maple Leafs, there's no excuses. I ain't giving them any excuses.
Okay, yeah, we get it. That's the clip. I will say this. This is my thought on the Keefe stuff. He clearly puts his foot in his mouth as a head coach with the media. He says stuff like the dumbest one the last week with this doesn't help our team or whatever with the Matthews goal pursuit.
That was an all-timer.
I went, are you kidding, man? So he's an emotional guy, and he gets up at that podium, and he lets it fly sometimes. And I joke with the guys behind the glass all the time whenever we get these Keefe quotes. I feel like every night he goes home and he's on his drive, he's like Chris Farley in the car hitting himself like, oh, idiot, you know, why did you say that? Why did you just have to let that loose? Because this just happens all the time. But the team is frustrating. And one of the weapons I really do believe at his disposal, and I mentioned this yesterday, I think, is that coaching through the media here has to work. Because guess what? Some of the other stuff hasn't. We've seen him in the dressing room with the 24/7 series yelling at his group and trying to get them to emotionally respond. And the way he interacts with players, like, he's a hard ass. He's huge with the details, right? He doesn't pick his battles. Like, he seems to sweat the small stuff as well as the big stuff. It's really hard for him to let things go, is my read on him and what I've heard from other people. But I think there's an added layer with him of he is not one of us in the greater hockey community. And that the sins of his past and the connections that he has had all the way back to his junior hockey days when he is a teenager, that he is still paying for those when it comes to the way people speak about him in this game.
Yeah, potentially. I think it's a valid point. You know, definitely. There is an intensity. There's like a subtle intensity with everything he does.
Buddy, he's not part of the boys club. Like, he's not. And again, he's not Craig Berube, where it's like people are like, oh, man, Craig Berube, like, he's got the bona fides and he's beloved. It's like, this is a very, very different thing in terms of other guys in hockey.
True. But I'll give him this just based on things I've heard. Mm-hmm. He does. I know it seems like an easy thing to say, but like, he does really care about what he's doing with this group.
Yes.
He's the type of guy, he's not going to, like, you order him a car, he doesn't come out late. Like, he is a very professional dude.
Yes.
And he has one of the best regular season records this organization's ever seen. So, like, these things about Sheldon Keefe we have to put on the table. I do believe you do have to, like, you got to handle the media. I think PK was right in 99% of what he said in that clip. Mm. You have to handle the media a certain way in this city because they won't turn on you often. When they do, you better know how to handle it. And I agree with him. I didn't think Saturday with Max was one of those times. I thought not only was he correct, but it worked the next game because Domi cut that garbage out or he let Tyler do it or McCabe or whoever. Mm-hmm. And he did what he was supposed to do, which was ride a very good shotgun to Austin and to get as many chances as he could. So man, the things we're watching with this team right now that don't necessarily have that much to do with what's going on game in and game out. Like, this is one of the most interesting franchises in professional sport. I would challenge anyone from a content standpoint, from what I would do on a daily basis, what you do on a daily basis. I mean, it's good times.
I don't even know who rivals them, to be honest. Like, I'm scanning my brain right now trying to think about, like, who's even.
I mean, no. Lakers?
No, because the Lakers, maybe? It's played out. It's been overdone. You want to talk about, like, who's had too many opinions on a team? What's Stephen A? I always forget. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but there's Stephen A's is called which one? First Take? No.
First Take. Yeah.
Okay. He's First Take. Okay. Because, yeah, I always First Up, First Take. I get the names confused. I run his show in my studio during the, it's just in the background. And it's like, I see LeBron up there every day. Doesn't matter what day it is. It's like LeBron is on the screen. Like, I see it. They beat it to death. Like, you think the Leafs get beaten to death? Imagine that on like a national scale in the States with all the eyeballs they have. Here's my thing with Sheldon. I actually don't care about the media stuff. I think that it's stupid when he says the things like Matthews and I chuckle about it, but it doesn't bother me. The things that bother me more so are, the strategic things, the fact that it'll take him so long to move off of something, or he'll try something that doesn't work. And then I'll have former players or, you know, even sometimes, guys who've coached who will tell me things and be like, this was actually a problem. Cause I think it's like for guys like you and me, where they're like, oh, this wasn't well coached or this wasn't a thing. We can parse from those stuff and we can see certain things that are themes. Like a group's buy-in, for example, to me is always like coaching, right? And their structure is that. But when certain guys who like really break it down seem to criticize them every single time when it comes to the playoffs, that's the one where I go, okay, maybe they're onto something. But the media stuff, like, as a media guy, I enjoy it. It gives me content. Anybody that gives me content, I'm like, thank you.
People listen. You do an amazing job. There are a handful of people in Canada that do this job very, very well. And content at this level is just rare to have waterfalls of it. And the Leafs organization finds a way for a team that is not even giving you upper or lower body on William Nylander.
Yeah.
How ignorant is that? We don't even deserve upper or lower body updates anymore from this organization. That's a whole nother discussion.
Okay. But, go there.
Go ahead.
Doesn't it? Okay. Because they've allowed us to speculate, may we speculate?
100%.
Is it fair? Because okay, this is now the segment. Is that is well? Maybe we'll do this. You and I is we'll call a segment. Is it fair? And we'll discuss whether or not it's fair to criticize a certain athlete at a certain time or a team for the way that they've handled something. So, Sid 6-0, is it fair that we can speculate about what is going on with the William Nylander saga, considering they will say no update on Willie, and that's all we get?
Yes.
Okay. So.
Yes. It's fair, but I'm okay. Uncomfortable with it.
I'm
uncomfortable with it because, dude, can I tell you a quick story about Breakfast Television here?
Yeah, of course.
Because I'm still rattled by this one.
Yeah.
So there was a story that broke about the royal family about a month and a half ago.
Yes.
Okay. It involved Associated Press, Reuters.
Yep.
Getty Images, for people who don't know, like some of the longest standing news organizations in the world,
mm-hmm.
who came together and said, that photo's fake.
Yep.
It wasn't me. It wasn't JD. It wasn't some dude on Twitter. It was like that kind of source.
Yep. I remember it.
So you run with a story for a while, and then because you get no information, you don't know. And then the truth comes out and you feel like complete dog crap for even speculating on this.
Yeah.
That was not that long ago in my world here.
Yep.
There's a part of me that has shut off when it comes to blind medical speculation.
I don't want to speculate about what it is. This is what I want to speculate about.
But then what's the conversation?
If we're not
speculating on what it is, what's the conversation?
This is the conversation. Is the fact that the Leafs have constantly gone no updates, that there's a sentiment of, well, he could return in the series, he might not return in the series, that the ambiguity around the injury has led me to believe that the Leafs are kind of trotting this one out there going, you know, it's in his hands, it's not in ours. It's not in our doctor's hands, it's in his. And I think that they're basically putting all the responsibility on the player. From a PR, from a speculation standpoint, this feels like most people are interpreting it now as like it's William Nylander's decision whether he goes or not. And I don't even know how you could kind of pick the other conclusion.
So you're saying this has an Alec Manoah feel to it at the end of last season?
I'm saying that this has like the team, it's backfired from the standpoint of, I think your job as a team is to protect the player, not just from injury, but from conversations like this. And by doing it this way, instead of just being like, Willie's banged up, we're hoping he can come back in this series. And hey, we're hoping at some point he can come back, but today is not today. And being more fervent in the fact that like the injury is real, that it has opened up the door for them being like, hey, fans, media, people, when you're speculating about what it could be, because that's what we're all doing. We're trying to figure out what it could be. We're at least coming up with theories, that there is an underlying tone of it's up to him, not up to doctors. When it's up to doctors, people go, yep, okay, the doctors decided. When it's up to the player, there's the insinuation of, well, maybe there's something else going on.
But even, valid point. But even if that's the case, mm-hmm. okay, your fan base has watched 7 straight playoff flameouts.
Yep.
That guy hasn't missed a game since 2016.
Exactly. He has those bona fides. That's why he's not taking it. That's why no one's really questioning it. I don't think. Anyways, not in my circles. I haven't seen anyone be like, oh, I think he's soft, and that's why he's...
I'm not going there at all.
Yeah.
But like, I don't believe the out of nowhere injury deserves a 100% non answer, which is what we got.
Yeah.
And now it could be right. It could be Willie and the team doctors maybe aren't agreeing. I mean, who knows what's going on
here? Yeah.
And if that's the case, things get really awkward. But it is to your point, normally protecting the athlete's important. I think protecting the awkwardness in the room and around the room is just as important.
I agree.
So that philosophy, and again, Sheldon threw Bradshaw Living under a pretty quick bus on it. And if he wants to do that, that's fine. Somebody made the decision. We're going to handle this our way. I'm stunned no one in the media has leaked it.
I don't think anybody knows.
I think people know. I think people know more than they know.
Okay.
Or more than what we think they know. Now, can you verify? Can you source it? That's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
But it was not that long ago someone in the media blurted out what Mitch's deal was.
Yeah.
Wasn't that long ago. So I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah.
But it just feels the way they've handled it. Look, he's hurt. It is what it is. But the lack of anything.
Yeah.
is a new level. If I had a friend who consistently bet on NHL playoff hockey, I'd slap them across the face.
Don't you dare, because I...
Stop doing that.
No, I do, and I won't stop.
JD, no. They believe you're entitled to no information. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
I do.
Why do you do that? Why?
I won yesterday.
Why did you do that?
I liked
that. Oh, you won?
Okay. Well, I mean, I only bet on one hockey game yesterday, and that was Colorado. Thanks.
But you know the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
I do not understand how blind from an information standpoint mm-hmm. the league believes we need to be. Mm-hmm. I get why the team believes that. How the league hasn't kind of rectified this at some level is kind of shocking to me, considering the new world we live in.
I just asked Luke Fox about it. You know what he told me? He's like, the league has no interest in changing it. I went, that's so shocking to me. With all the advent of gambling and all the news. And, yeah, just how? How? How are they
so far behind?
I just
want to report, man. Like, just have an injury report. Like, I don't need something as detailed as the NFL. It's not like the NFL is 100%. Mm-hmm. But, like, something. Anyway.
Anything.
That's been on my brain for a couple of days. It is a brave soul who, in this NHL lack of information environment, puts down a playoff hockey. A brave, brave soul.
Sid, thanks for coming on today, brother. This was always great. We'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the game tonight.
Appreciate you, man. Take care.
See you, pal. Sid Sixero, Breakfast Television. I enjoyed that. All right, quick break. I want to hit on some of the other million things I watched yesterday.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So this just in from our boy Luke Fox, who was here earlier today. William Nylander. Taking reps with Holmberg and Yarncroc at morning skate. We'll hear from Keefe shortly. He didn't write in the gas part. I did that. That was my little touch. So he's playing. He's taking line rushes. He's playing. That's a different move than what we've seen before. This isn't him just skating with a couple of the scratches. This is him playing and skating with guys who are playing. And those are the guys that he would be joining on a line temporarily, because again, he will unequivocally be jumping up and playing some minutes with Tavares and with Marner. And whatever. This is just fun. This is really not that serious. Like, it's a sports radio show, so if you're going to fill your pants about it, you can. But I'm telling you that if he is playing in this hockey game, he's playing before they have two more days off, right? Like Luke outlined it. You get a pretty big reprieve. You get the added benefit of 3 nights without playing if you sit him. It lends to the idea that this has always been in Nylander's hands. And what Sid was alluding to is the Manoah situation was, Manoah was like, I'm hurt. And the doctors went, you ain't. I'm not saying Nylander's not, because clearly he's hurt. Like, he's moving that way, and he's been an Iron Man. And I do not think he is at all the type of frankly, I don't think that there is anybody that's made it to the NHL that's the kind of makeup that's like, I'm not playing tonight because they're, like, really overstating an injury. The difference is that with this sport, guys play through horrific injuries to a point where it makes you uncomfortable sometimes. You go, I don't think you should damage your quality of life for this moment. I don't want to take the decision out of your hands, but damn, I don't know how I feel about it. And with Nylander, the only thing that you can kind of piece together with the clues is that it was never, or at least it isn't, the doctors in this moment that are saying he cannot go. It's he's testing it out, and he's letting them know what his pain threshold is. And that creates a spinoff of people going, well, if everybody else has played through pain, and you'll hear this from other players too. This isn't just a media thing. And in fact, their opinions are the ones that you should respect on this, where you hear their war stories of the stuff that they've played through, and then you start comparing and contrasting, and that part's unfair. That part's kind of stupid, really, because, man, if he does have a back that's locked up, he can't move, like, what are you supposed to say? But yeah, that... it just feels like they're listening to him and he's listening to his body, and maybe we get to see him tonight. Hopefully we get to see him tonight.
There's no Ben Simmonses in the NHL is what you're saying.
No, yeah, there's only one Ben Simmons, and he's, you know, Mike Jose's favorite player for some reason because he's a lefty who plays defense. Like, it was got to be the dumbest thing I've ever heard, honestly. Like, I've heard so many dumb things on the show. Like, I watched one of you guys misspell Gretzky. And Mike still now top of the pile.
I'll double down. He's the guy.
Jobo thought, like, genuinely that the NFL might be scripted.
I love
liking Ben Simmons and ride or dying with him as like a personality trait is even dumber. Especially, it's like, again, you're already the world's weirdest guy. You ride around a van full of balloons. You can't eat any food. You got stories that start like, well, I was down in the Dominican Republic where I was living for some time, and I was, it's like, yeah, you got, you know, it's, you're already weird. Like, you're already weird enough. You don't
need... I see the Ben Simmons, like, videos before the season starts, and he's putting up, like, threes or whatever, and it's like, oh, this, yeah, we're going to do this again. I buy in.
Yeah, every single time. I'm just saying, it's like, you don't need to do any more quirk. In fact, you are in desperate need of a normal thing. You have a pet rabbit.
Normalize, Michael.
Like, yeah, yeah, like, this guy has a pet rabbit. This is the weirdest human being that I have not come across many guys that I go, like, I don't, the second you step out of here, whatever it is you're doing, I don't want to know anything about it. I'm like, nope, I want to have deniability when it comes to you, brother. Like, I do not have any interest in knowing what you do when you step one foot out of this building. Over. That is when our relationship ceases to exist. That is when we have no longer any affiliation whatsoever. You see me out in public, don't stop me. don't approach. Stay over with your people, whoever they may be. Anyways, what we missed, I touched on it. I watched a lot of games yesterday, but I want to start with this because we only got a couple seconds. Man, Kyrie Irving was awesome yesterday, okay? Kyrie was incredible. Luka hit all the shots down the stretch, but there's a Kyrie Renaissance thing happening for me. Not only is his game brilliant, not only is, like, the shot making incredible, his PR spin that he's had, whatever, it's just, he's had such a long, people have hated Kyrie from Boston to the way that he left LeBron to the COVID stuff to the weird documentary that he was tweeting out, right? Like, it's just a lot of bad PR. The Brooklyn Nets, all of it. All of the bad Kyrie clippings, and we've kind of forgotten about him. And watching him in the series where it's just like, oh my God, he's brilliant. He is just, if you like sports, you got to watch Kyrie. He's playing defense. He's reading plays. He's getting steals. He's digging into James Harden, not giving him clean looks. He's hitting shots, floaters with both hands. He's knocking down huge threes. Like, my biggest takeaway yesterday is I'm back in on Kyrie, okay? I have rebought all the Kyrie stock. I'm all the way back with Kyrie Irving. Go Kyrie, go Dallas Mavericks. Enjoy that series because it's going to be a lovely one. Leafs tonight. It's on Sportsnet. It's on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's on all the Sportsnet things. Subscribe to this podcast, please. I appreciate it. On Apple Music or on Spotify, leave 5 stars. Hit thumbs up if you watch this stuff on YouTube, and watch Leafs Talk later tonight. We're on right after the show. Subscribe and review to that as well. See you tomorrow.